Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Grant and Danny without Danny, who is at the beach. I am jealous. He can kick rocks. He's got his toes in the sand, living his best life. I'm in our Half Street studios with you until 6:30 tonight right here on your flagship home for the Nats and the Caps. We've been breaking down the Commanders early and often today and the former head coach out in Ashburn of the then Redskins pre-football team, Jay Gruden, joins us now. Jay, great to talk to you again. How you been, man?
Been good, Grant. How you been?
I am chilling. What are you up to? How's everything going?
Everything's good. Working on my golf game a little bit, watching a little tape, having some fun. Enjoying life, Grant. Enjoying life.
Attaboy. Staying busy. So, what kind of golfer are you now, by the way? Good for a non PGA Tour golfer? Would you impress if you're going and playing a scramble? You play a lot, right?
Yeah. I'm all right. I'm like a 6 handicap or something like that.
Okay, so you're
7,
really
5,
good.
4. Got it on a day. Something like that.
All right, I got you. You're doing some things. So let's start with the Commanders on the news of the day. They fired a coach during training camp today. Have you ever heard of that?
No. Never heard of that. Doesn't happen very often, you know. After training camp, a couple things you want. You want cohesion. You don't want controversy. And that's one thing that you try to avoid as a coach. But sometimes you have to make a bold move like that to create more cohesion, maybe. Maybe there were some people ruffling some feathers in meetings or disrupting the defensive meetings and on-field activities. Who knows what happened there? Just very odd for it to happen this time of year because they had the whole – off-season to do it last year. I knew what kind of coach he was. I heard he was doing pretty good. I know Jonathan liked him, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, so that's what I'm interested in. I mean, when you were a head coach, can you just take us through the evaluation of your assistants and how that worked? Because I remember, like, the first press conference at the end of the year, we'd always ask you, hey, are you making any changes to the staff? And you would kind of, you know, one way or the other say, hey, we're going to look at that. But I mean, you have months to figure that out. How is it possible that you would want to keep a guy when you've got other options you could bring in, only to then, a few days before the preseason opener, change your mind?
Yeah, that's the odd thing about it. You know, obviously, he's very familiar with Coach Rivera, and something had to happen. I don't know. You know, I don't know. We can speculate all we want to, but obviously something behind the scenes happened. Either he and Jack Del Rio didn't get along, or maybe some of the defensive linemen didn't get along. Who knows what happened there? But obviously a move was made for a reason. Nobody knows what that reason is, but they had a lot of time to understand what type of coach he was, what type of person he was before today, that's for sure.
So more broadly, less on Sam Mills, because as you said, we got no idea what exactly happened. Position coaches. I have debates with baseball people about this a lot. Like, how important is a manager versus a hitting coach versus a pitching coach? What would a D-line coach's role be on a given week? Are they instructing on fundamentals day in and day out? If we're saying this guy doesn't have enough moves, is that their fault? Is it more film study? Like, actually take us inside the roles of a position coach.
Well, it depends on the coach. Defensive line coach, obviously, you're going to work a lot of individual drills with those defensive line of pass rush moves, run gaps, rules, where you're supposed to go. Obviously, line stunts are very, very important, both in the run game and in the passing game. You got to work on the twists and stuff to really manufacture some four-man rushes. You got to work on your blitz entries. Those are very important. How are you going to play the run? If it's a solo gap or is it a two gap? Those are all very important. In the big scheme of things, obviously some defensive line coaches have more responsibility than others. Some are responsible for third and short. Some are responsible for goal line. Some are responsible for different types of fronts that they can run. So there's it depends. You know, it's up to Coach Del Rio at the end of the day to distribute those rules and things that the defensive line coach has to do.
I'm trying to remember when you were here and Jay Gruden's with me on Grant and Danny, if you ever had to dismiss an assistant. I don't think it happened, obviously, in season at all, but that's got to be maybe the worst thing as a coach that you have to do as part of your job. That's got to be worse than even cutting a player, which is more normal and comes with the territory.
Yeah, actually, you know, assistants are difficult. You know, they're difficult to keep. They're difficult to hire sometimes. It's hard to get the right one. It's hard to get all the interviews set up. Because after the season, when guys are let go, you know, whole teams are let go, head coaches are let go, some owners keep the assistants until they hire another coach. Some guys are available. You don't have time to interview everybody. It's hard to find the right guy, like I said. It's very difficult to get the right assistants in. Sometimes you panic and overpay a guy too soon, and then somebody shakes and she's like, dang, I wish I would have got that guy. But it is a process. And then keeping them is a different story. You know, everybody wants a raise at the end of the year. Everybody wants to go up a level. They want to go from line coach to coordinator to head coach, receiver coach to coordinator, whatever it might be, or they want more money. They want another year in a contract. It's difficult. You know, it's important to find the right guys, the right loyal guys that are going to work extremely hard, regardless of the circumstance. And they're hard to find nowadays. Fortunately, we had some good ones at Washington when I was there. Randy Jordan was phenomenal. He's still there. We had some good ones. We had some I'd like to have shaken loose a little bit sooner than I did.
But do you hire all of them? Or sometimes, like when you joke about there are guys you wish you would have gotten rid of sooner, is that sometimes that, you know, coordinators will say, hey, I want to hire this guy? Or maybe a GM, Bruce, or someone else says, hey, let's work with this guy. I mean, isn't it your call?
There was a couple that I was forced to hire, you know, but for the most part, you know, I was happy with our assistants. Obviously, offensively, we have some pretty good ones, Sean McVay and you know, O'Connell.
McDaniel.
I mean, those are very good. You know, we've had some, you know, Dave Ragone who went up. We have a lot of guys who have gone up to higher levels and obviously done very, very well. Defensively, unfortunately, we didn't really get it done. You know, I like Joe Barry. We let Joe Barry go. I liked Coach Hazlett. We had to let him go. Unfortunately for those guys, it was more probably personnel related than coach related. We just tried to make some changes to get the right fits, finally get the right people to fit the scheme. Unfortunately, that really never happened for us.
You know, it's interesting you bring some of those names up. We're talking a ball with Jay Gruden here on Grant and Danny, because I remember thinking when you hired Joe Barry, and at that time, I'm pretty sure his only coordinating experience was in Detroit. And one of those years was when the Lions were 0 for their entire season, and they ranked 31, 32, I think, in his 2 years there. And look, he probably didn't have talent to work with. I mean, that was an awful team. But when you're struggling defensively, and the only sample we have is when you've ranked 31, 32, he got beat up in the media really bad. Now you fast forward to last year, and Joe Barry was the D coordinator of the Packers, and all of a sudden everyone likes Joe Barry as a defensive coordinator. It's funny, but
yeah.
I don't necessarily.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't feel bad about like crushing the. Because my point then was the story had come out. I think that you guys could have hired Wade Phillips or something, and he was salty that he didn't get the job. Do you remember any of that?
Oh yeah. I remember that very well. You know, there was a couple guys that I thought were going to shake loose that didn't shake loose, and it wasn't my fault at the end of the day. You know, Joe Barry's a good football coach. You know, we didn't have the firepower for him to be as successful as he could have been. And now that he has firepower at Green Bay, you see what type of coach he can be. And that's like all coaches, assistant coaches, coordinators. You know, you're a much better coordinator when you have very good players. It's not that hard to figure out. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to be a very good offensive coordinator. If you don't have any pass rush, you can't be a very good defensive coordinator. You know, we had a little bit of everything, but we didn't have enough of the core nucleus of good defensive football players to really cover up some of our weaknesses, unfortunately. You know, we had some good days, some really good players from time to time, but for the long haul, we just weren't quite good enough personnel-wise. Joe is a fine coach. You know, I think it came down to some personnel decisions that we made that I disagreed with, and I thought we had to get better there, and I thought, like I said, there were going to be somebody that shook loose that I was going to be able to get that I didn't get.
7 years after coming to Washington, 6 here in D.C., obviously, with Washington, and then the OC of the Jaguars in his final year in the league. Started in Cincinnati calling plays and had Andy Dalton at 33 touchdowns and Jay Gruden here on Grant and Danny. So let's talk preseason for a moment, because the first game is Saturday night, but Thursday we start again with another week of preseason football. We're down now for most teams to 3 preseason games. How would you go about handling playtime for those 3 games, do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of coaches that have different philosophies. I'm more on the line of getting your starters, your known starters, in and out quickly, you know, because those guys are veteran-type guys. They've been together. They know the system. They know what game day looks like. They may have not played together with everybody on your team right now. You might have some new guys that are sprinkled into your offense, but you like to get them in and out. But Washington could be different because they do have a new quarterback, so they may choose to play their offensive starter for another series or another quarter or longer just because they want to get some cohesion with, obviously, Carson before the first game. So that might change. But if you have a veteran team like the Rams, I doubt you'll see Matthew Stafford at all. I doubt you'll see Cooper Kupp. You know, the Patriots, you know, that they may play more guys because they're a young football team. But my whole goal was to get the known starters to the first game healthy and then make sure that we had a good competition and make sure we saw enough of the guys who were competing for starting jobs the opportunity to win a job or lose a job, depending on how they played in the games. But health is number one. And number two, the younger players, let's see how they do when the lights are on, because practice players are different than game day players. You have to find out the difference between those guys, the bottom 15 to 25 guys on your roster. You got to find out about those guys in the preseason.
What positions are hardest, do you think, to evaluate in practice versus game?
Linemen, defensive linemen, offensive linemen, linebackers are very hard. Safeties, you know, it's very hard. Actually, running backs, I mean, you're never really tackling. How can they run through tackles? Do they protect the ball when they do get hit? Quarterbacks are not hitting court. No position is very easy to evaluate in non-hitting practices. You can see the skill guys run and jump. Defensive backs, you can see their hips turn and their cover ability, but still don't really see them tackle very much. Nobody really, there's a great definition of a practice player that will translate. There's a few obvious ones that have the height, weight, speed, and making plays all over the place. They'll translate easy, but there's not many of those. Guys that you know have seen, done it, based on their pro football film, like Trent Williams, like, would I ever really need him to play in a preseason game? No. You know what I mean? Sheriff, I didn't really want him out there very much at all either. He's a great player for us. Obviously, Terry McLaurin, even as a rookie, I didn't even put him out there. I didn't want him to be seen or pull a hamstring or anything crazy. Jordan Reed, I didn't want him to play. I played on one series too many against the Falcons, and he got hit in the head. You know, I regret that. I played Darius Geis 7 plays in his first preseason game, and he blew his knee out. So those are regrets that I have about the preseason. But you do have to have some camaraderie. The reason I played Jordan Reed is because we had new quarterback. Case Keenum was new, and he wanted to get a couple catches with Case. So it's a fine line between, you know, playing these guys, getting them hurt, risking them, and then getting the experience and banging around a little bit, getting them ready for the first game.
It is somewhat new, though, in the league. You mentioned the Rams and McVay have kind of been the leaders on this, but there are a couple teams with their veterans that didn't play them at all. And I'm talking about, like, almost entire units. I don't know. That, to me, it seems like if these games really don't help you at all from a veteran standpoint, then we would have not been doing them. We wouldn't have been having them. I understand what you're saying about the young players and the reason that it's beneficial, but do the, let's say a Trent Williams type, he doesn't need a single preseason game to be at his best in week one, or are you just saying it's worth it to me if he's not 100% in week one and he's not 100% till week three that we don't risk the injury?
Yeah, no, he doesn't need it. No. Anybody who knows Trent, and some of your star players, you know, like do you think Aaron Donald needs a couple of reps in a preseason game to get a sack to feel good about going into week one? Do you think Myles Garrett needs to rush the passer to get himself ready for week one?
So let me clarify, Jay. I mean football shape.
Needs to run any routes.
Are they able to get into football shape just practicing then?
Oh, yeah. These guys are pros. They better be in football shape when they come to camp. The great ones are. The great ones are never out of shape. You know what I'm saying? If you have to worry about guys being in shape, then you got the wrong guys. You know, if you guys are huffing and puffing in the second quarter of your first game, you know, it's the responsibility of the strength coach and that player to get themselves in shape. I mean, you know, as a coach, you're not going to run these guys ragged and kill these guys. You got to run them and make sure they get some good cardio, get the weight room going, make sure they get some good lifting. Sometimes instead of practicing, you send them with the strength coach and the conditioning coach, get them some work, which is very, very critical for the long season. Try to do that, you know, a couple times a week throughout the training camp, which is as important sometimes as doing 9-on-7 drills.
Jay Gruden knows a thing or two about the quarterback position. Let's talk Carson Wentz for a second. How much should we care about the ebbs and the flows of his practice performance? Like, he was inaccurate today, or he's missed a lot over the first couple weeks of camp. If you were a coach, would that register for you as a concern at some point? When does it become something that you notice or actually care about?
Well, obviously, these guys put some time in to study Carson. That's why they went out and got him. So they know that he might have a little bit of an inaccuracy issue from time to time, but they're hoping that the scheme that they have, the players around him, will help him a lot. The running game with Antonio Gibson will help a lot. You know what I mean? So they have some ideas, and I'm sure they have some ways to get him some easy completions. Now the missed throws, you just hope that they're happening now and not happening on game day. A lot of times this time of year, when you have a new quarterback, you have a quarterback learning a system for the first time, you have a new receiver in Dotson, you have a couple new players up front, the defense should be ahead of the offense right now. The defense for Washington right now is a little bit better, probably more experienced. You know, Fuller and Payne and obviously Jonathan Allen and Sweat, Cole Holcomb playing linebacker, and they should be a little bit ahead of the offense right now, and that's to be expected. But you're hoping that all the reps that you get now, a couple reps you get in the preseason games, leading up to your first game, those guys will be ready and hitting on all cylinders.
You mentioned last time we talked several months ago, we kind of broke the bunch of the quarterbacks down, and you ranked some of them as far as who you thought had the best years coming up in their career. Wentz, as a fit in this offense, knowing the scheme that they run like you do, how does he fit schematically in the passing game for them?
Well, I think he'll fit fine. You know, I think he's got more weapons than probably he's had in a long time. You know, Philadelphia had some good weapons, obviously, but last year in Indianapolis, they didn't really have as many weapons as you think. Their tight end presence wasn't very good. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor was a superstar, but in the passing game, I think T.Y. Hilton was in and out of the lineup. Zach Pascal was okay. But having Terry McLaurin and the rookie Dotson and obviously Curtis Samuel, having a tight end like, you know, Logan Thomas, and John Bates, you know, you have some guys that can really hurt you in a lot of different ways, and they can attack the field differently with the running game and the play action and the screens, should help the quarterback tremendously. You know, so you're hoping that he makes a major improvement with the new system. Hopefully Scotty Turner does a nice job with him and gets him some easy completions, get him some rhythm. And then the big shots, the shots that they have to hit to make this offense successful, hopefully he can drop some dimes and make some big plays.
What would you say, and Jay Gruden's with us, a couple of moments left here on Grant and Danny, what are some of the coaching points with a guy like Wentz who struggled with layups, you know, some of the easy stuff, and also has had some issues where he will make the incredible play? He broke your guys' backs. I mean, when you were coaching here, time and time again, kind of coming out of pass rush like a surfer through a wave when you thought he was going down to the ground. But he makes life hard on the O-line a little bit because he holds the ball. That's a gift and a curse. As a former quarterback, how do you coach that part of his play extension in his game?
Well, you hope that he can obviously extend plays because that's a necessity nowadays in pro football. There's only a couple guys. Even Tom Brady doesn't move very well. He extends plays by moving in the pocket and buying time. You hope that he can do that because you have to do that. Three-man rushes, you have to buy some time. You have to wait for second window, third window throws sometimes. Taking sacks, not protecting the football, is unacceptable, and that's something that he has to make sure he does a better job of. Second and 18, it's hard to overcome. Second and 10, second and 8, that's okay. Checking the ball down, getting it to your check down, live to fight another day. That's what he's got to learn to do more consistently, in my opinion. And when the plays are there, he's got to hit them. He's a pro quarterback. I mean, you're one of the 32 starting quarterbacks in the National Football League. If you got an open receiver, the ball's got to be on him. It's got to be on him accurately, and it's got to be on time. That's what you're paid to do. So hopefully he can turn the corner. This is going to be his third, maybe fourth season, third different, you know, coordinator. So hopefully third time's a charm for him. But he does have to do some improving for the Washington football team or whatever their name is to do better.
Commanders. You got to keep up, Commanders. Jay. It's the Commanders. What do you think of the Commanders as a team name?
I don't really have a thought. I don't like it. I should have kept the football. You know, I already made my 2 cents known. it doesn't matter to me. It's a name. You know, it's up to these football players in the Washington to make that name a proud staple of this area. And hopefully this year they can get it done.
They're coming out with a new fight song, too. They're changing the fight song, you know.
Wow, isn't that something? That'll really make a difference.
It's going to make a big difference. I think we have two options. Do we remember what they are, Darius? One of them is Leaders on a Mission. I think so. They're taking words out of the – it's the exact same old fight song. But the two options are either Fight for the Commanders or Leaders on a Mission.
Fight for our commanders.
Fight for our commanders. Sorry. But it doesn't make sense to me, Jay. Because the Commanders.
That is exciting, man. That just got me fired up.
Right? Yeah, well, here's the other one. There's another one here. This will get you even more fired up.
Leaders on a Mission.
See?
Yeah, yeah. That's a good one.
Which one would you go with?
I'd go with neither.
Neither, really?
I'd play like I'd play like a Guns N' Roses song come out of the tunnel, something exciting.
you know what I mean?
Welcome to the Jungle or something exciting, man. Get these guys going.
Leaders
on a Mission. I don't think that gets anybody fired up.
The Barbershop Quartet, bro. You don't like it?
Yeah.
But seriously though, what I love though is Leaders on a Mission. While cheesy makes sense. The thing that I love is this idea of fight for our commanders, but it's theoretically the rest of the song is sung as if the commanders are singing it. So it's like who's fighting exactly? Like as a fan in the stands, am I supposed to fight on behalf of the commanders? I just don't understand what I'm supposed to do. That's all.
Yeah, me either.
I guess you got to go fight. You got to go scratch and claw, Jay. Hard Knocks tonight.
Yes.
You robbed me of Hard Knocks, by the way.
Why is that?
You never wanted Hard Knocks, supposedly.
Nobody wants Hard Knocks. Nobody's going to volunteer and raise their hand and say, please come to our building and film Hard Knocks, for God's sake.
I want Hard Knocks so bad. Do you know how much you guys would have killed on Hard Knocks? You were great for the Bengals. Yeah. You were a real character. Everyone loved you. It was probably good for your career.
Yeah,
you're an up-and-coming coordinator.
You dread the idea of somebody in your office following around all day. But at the end of the day, they're very professional. They did a great job with it. They didn't put anything in there that was offensive or that would hurt anybody's feelings or anything like that. So they did a great job. It's definitely a professional run show. And who's got it this year? Detroit.
Detroit tonight. Dan Campbell eating kneecaps.
That won't be good.
I can't wait. But seriously, I really think Hard Knocks is good for people. Like Rex Ryan became a star. You were an OC up and comer in your mid 40s. I thought it was good for you to be on Hard Knocks. Everyone gets to see you running meetings.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But then then they want to come to Washington. You turn your back on them and say no.
It wasn't my call. It was I had bosses ahead of me that made those calls.
Uh-oh.
Bruce Allen, those guys. I didn't make any decisions around here. I just sat there, called plays.
Rivera, it's coach centric. It's president and head coach. You should have got that deal.
I know it. I should have got that deal. I wish I would have.
You got to talk to your agent about that. Hey, Jay, I'd love to continue chatting. We'll have to do it again soon. Thank you for catching up a little bit. That was fun.
You got it, Grant. No problem. Anytime.
All right. See ya. Always love talking with Jay Gruden here on Grant and Danny. I didn't think we'd end up playing the fight songs for him, but that was a good time. Can you pull coming back that I didn't make any decisions around here? I just called the plays. That is really fun. Also, Roger Goodell has made a comment on the NFL pushing back against Deshaun Watson's suspension. We'll tell you what he said next on G&D.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But then they want to come to Washington. You turn your back on them and say no.
It wasn't my call. It was I had bosses ahead of me that made those calls.
Uh-oh.
Bruce Allen, those guys. I didn't make any decisions around here. I just sat there, called plays.
Rivera, it's coach centric. It's president and head coach. You should have got that deal.
I know it. I should have got that deal. I wish I would have.
You got to talk to your agent about that. That was fun having Jay Gruden on the show. Always entertaining. Welcome back. Grant and Danny without Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Didn't expect to have him weigh in on the fight songs or have him singing the fight song, but he did. He belted it out, so that was good. If you missed any part of the interview, thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio. You wade through some of the fun at the end there, and you will get some actual content from a guy who, you know, teams are still calling and having evaluate things for them at times, breaking down Carson Wentz as a fit in Washington's offense. All of our coverage, including that conversation on Commanders training camp, is brought to you by Paul Henry's Windows, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Just saw this quote from Roger Goodell. Wanted to get this to you guys. On the decision to appeal Deshaun Watson's suspension. So remember, Judge Sue Robinson, third-party arbiter, as a judge, heard the NFL's side, prosecution of sorts, I guess, asking for a one-year suspension for Watson. And then the Players Association, the defendants, I guess, in this case, wanting the smallest punishment possible, and she ruled that Watson should be suspended 6 games. Because of the new CBA, though, the way that it's worded, the NFL still has final say, and it's not specifically Roger Goodell like it used to be. Goodell now appoints another judge who comes in and levies the suspension, basically. But Goodell today, in talking with reporters, was asked about this, and he said, quote, "As you know, it's a part of the CBA that two parties have the right. Either party could certainly challenge and appeal, and that was something that we thought was our right to do, as well as the NFLPA's, so we decided it was the right thing to do," end quote. So his point is, in the future, if we get our way, the Players Association will be able to fight and push back against the Sue Robinson decision for how many games she wants whatever player that is to be suspended. Here's the difference, though, is that in this CBA, according to all the reporting done on this, the NFL is the final say. So if Goodell, and I say Goodell, I mean the league, so see Goodell and think NFL, but if Goodell comes back and says it's actually going to be a 14 or a 17-game, one-year suspension for Deshaun Watson, that's the end of the road now. The Players Association can fight and take this to court and push back, and I'm sure they will dig in and do that. But there is verbiage in the CBA, supposedly, that says that what the NFL decides in this upcoming decision is final, binding. Which is why I just don't get why the Players Association would have agreed to that aspect of the collectively bargained agreement. I guess there's just so many pages and so many things that matter to them that you give in certain areas, just like the league does. I just would have thought that this was one of the really critical elements of this new CBA that you wouldn't have possibly agreed when the whole point was to make sure Roger Goodell is not the judge, juror, and executioner, that he's still the guy calling the shots on length of suspensions. Because it was sold to us way differently than that, remember? We spent the last several months saying, leading up to what was going to happen in this hearing with Watson, that it's no longer Roger Goodell's opinion. Sue Robinson gets to call the shots now. And even though we knew she was just suggesting what the suspension would be, I'll speak for myself, I certainly thought that if she said 6 games, it was probably going to be about 6 games, which just doesn't seem like the case at all. The NFL has its say. Now, this is the first time we're going to go through this, and so if it's close to the 6 games, let's say they do 8 games, then we'll know that they'll try to hedge and be as reasonable based on what Sue Robinson wanted as possible. But what if they just come back and it's a one-year suspension? They argued for 1 year. A third-party arbitration took place, and the judge ruled on 6 games. Then the league appealed and comes out and hands them a 1 year suspension anyway. I know that a lot of people listening probably agree that a 1 year suspension for Deshaun Watson would be justified or warranted. I'm not asking you to reconsider that or to think anything else. What I am saying, though, is what is the point of Sue Robinson? What is the point of that first hearing? And because your interests align this time, mine, frankly, I don't think he should play in week 7 of this season, personally. Not that that matters. But because our interests align with a longer suspension based on what is alleged and what is believed to have happened, Sue Robinson even agreed that he did a lot of the things that have been alleged, it doesn't mean that the process isn't completely flawed and ridiculous. this is all a dog and pony show. This was a bill of goods we were sold about the fact that the process is different and new and better and efficient. No, it's a show. You go do this hearing with this judge who suggests a punishment. It would be the equivalent of you and your parents not agreeing on what a punishment should be when you're a kid and you sneak out. And you say you shouldn't be punished, and they say you should be punished for a month without any technology, cell phone, laptop, whatever. And so you guys agree that this third-party person's going to hear both sides and tell you what the punishment should be. And they're like, yeah, I think 10 days punishment is probably good enough. And then your parents go, okay, thank you very much. You're going to serve the 1 month that we wanted you to. Well, why did we even do the first part? What was the reason for any of that? Goodell was also asked about the league seeking a one-year suspension still for Watson. He said, quote, because we've seen the evidence, referenced Sue Robinson, saying, quote, she was very clear about the evidence. Should we enforce the evidence that there was multiple violations here and there were egregious and it was predatory behavior? Those are things that we always felt were important for us to address in a way that is responsible, end quote. He was asked, does the league view four different violations, meaning four different women coming forward to tell their story, because there were 24 of them, but they only got to hear the cases of the four women, for whatever reason, in the hearing, as being different than if it was one person. And he said, I think that's the case. That's what the facts say. So, cannot wait to see what happens here. I wonder what the timeline is, oh, by the way. I mean, the league does nothing quickly in this regard, and I know that their goal is not necessarily to help the Browns out, but it is August 9th. We are playing preseason games this week, and the opener's a month away, so it would probably be nice for Cleveland to know what is going on at their quarterback position. But then again, I'm not sure that, you know, the Browns, who gave this guy the guaranteed money that they did and brought him in amid all the allegations, are going to get a lot of pity around the NFL. But what do you guys make of this? What do you think is going to go down? 800-636-1067. If the league comes back and he suspended the 1 year that they always wanted, should we just get rid of this system altogether? How will the Players Association handle it, do you think? Grant and Danny, no Danny today on the Fan. Hard to fathom Deshaun Watson's suspension not being at least doubled after what Roger Goodell said today. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. Without Danny, this is the Fan. Goodell defending his decision today to appeal Judge Robinson's ruling of six games. And on top of that, calling Deshaun Watson's behavior egregious and predatory. Egregious and predatory. The commissioner today, while this appeal is ongoing, while another judge he is appointed to rule on how many games for Deshaun Watson is basically still deliberating, he called it egregious and predatory. And I'm not asking what should happen, how many games Watson should get. I'm just suggesting that this entire process doesn't make sense. If Sue Robinson says six games and Goodell appeals it and now maybe ultimately gets what he wanted all along anyway, which is a year for Watson, which I think is what some are assuming might happen. And we got to wait and see. But if, in fact, Watson is going to serve a year upon appeal, then I just don't understand what the point of the Sue Robinson portion of this process is. Why are we even doing that? Seems like a waste of time, waste of a lot of pixels and energy, people reporting on it, a lot of people reading these stories for what? Just go back to what you were doing before. Matt is in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Matt? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Thanks for taking my call, Grant. The one thing that I think that can possibly be beneficial from having the independent judge is at least Goodell isn't doing the investigation, if you will, or like isn't corroborating the evidence, I guess is a better way to say it. So he can always point back to, well, the judge said that this happened, and that's, it makes it more credible when he does lay the hammer down and come back with a different suspension. So that's the only benefit I could see to the process. Even if he overturns the decision, at least he has somebody else, an independent person to corroborate the evidence.
So it's interesting, and I think for the record, Matt, that this is really smart for Roger Goodell to do it this way, because I believe that he's going to look like the good guy almost no matter what, because he'll read and react based on whatever the public is saying. If the public thinks that a suspension is too strong, then he'll lessen it. If, in this case, the public thinks that a suspension is not enough, then he'll tack games on. So I think it was strategically brilliant. Now, I am assuming that this new appointed lawyer that is going to rule is basically going to work on Goodell's behalf. I guess that might not be the case. I just know that the league doesn't lose, and that in general, if you hire someone to work the case, they answer to you, no? So if he's on record today saying he still wants a year, that this guy's a predator, I mean, that's what he said, it was predatory behavior, that this is egregious what he did, and he's signing your check for the investigation that you're doing, for the ruling that you're delivering, you're probably going to side with something close to him. So I'm not surprised that he wanted this. I think this is great for him. I guess I'm surprised from a PA standpoint that this is how this is actually going to work. And I just didn't know what I didn't know. I mean, I didn't find out until, like everyone else, after Sue Robinson's ruling, that really that was written in pencil. Because now the actual hearing happens if the league wants to push back. And that's why, remember, the Players Association came out before we even knew it was six games. They obviously knew what was up. And they tried to get the league to agree publicly that they weren't going to fight. Wasn't going to happen. Why would they do that? And frankly, the Players Association in the future may well play hardball when they don't like a ruling. It wasn't like they were, you know, doing it to do the right thing. I think in this case, they knew they got what they wanted, and so they wanted the league to walk away with them, and they claimed victory, and that just was never going to be the case. But if I had to guess, I'm not going to say full season for Deshaun Watson. I'll bet you it's 14 games, is my guess. I'll bet you it's a massive leap from where they were at six. And the only reason I say it's not going to be a full season is because I would imagine, maybe the league just doesn't care, but I'll bet they could claim they didn't get what they want. See, we weren't overly influential in this process if it's not a full year. Because they could come out and still be upset or act angry and say that he shouldn't play this season. Or Goodell could have another press conference where he says this was predatory, this was egregious, and he shouldn't be able to play this season. Whereas if this comes back to being a one-year suspension, just like they wanted, you're going to have a lot of people saying the game was rigged. And again, I'm not trying to defend Deshaun Watson, or I'm certainly not saying he should play this year. That is in no way what I'm doing here. I personally, if they asked me to rule, I would probably suspend him for the season. But we just had someone hear the case, and they said six games. And now we're supposed to just act like that didn't happen. Meanwhile, the AFC North, where you've got a Ravens team that has a chance to make a deep playoff run, a Bengals team that was in the Super Bowl last year, a Steelers team that I think is being slept on in this preseason with a great defense and a coach who's never had a losing year, one of the best coaches in football, kind of all waiting in the wings to see what's going to happen here, whether or not the Browns are a viable, legitimate contender. We got Hard Knocks tonight. We got a Nats game, plenty to set the table for. Plus, Ryan's going to explain it all before we get out of here on Grant and Danny, next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue.
And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.